Welcome to Seize the Day, a podcast from the Duke Marine Lab. I'm Sarah Norton, an undergrad at Duke majoring in biology and marine science and conservation.
And I'm Aileen Lavelle, a second year coastal environmental management student, also at the Duke Marine Lab.
This episode is made by students participating in the Bass Connections project team, Belugas, Sentinels of Climate Change in the Arctic. Our team is led by Dr. Dave Johnston and Dr. Andy Reed, and our fellow team members include PhD student Greg Merrill, master students Ike Banaka, Anna Bishop, and Brian Graybill, and undergraduate student Lily Samuels.
This August, we had the opportunity to travel to Churchill, Manitoba in Canada, to the polar bear capital of the world, to see belugas in person and learn about the impacts of climate change on these charismatic species and ecotourism industry within the small, isolated town that depends on them.
You are listening to a hydrophone recording of Delphinapterus lucus, Kinalugok, or beluga whales in Churchill, Manitoba. Hydrophones are microphones designed to be used underwater for recording or listening to underwater sound. We took these recordings on our Bass Connections trip this summer while on a small inflatable boat covered head to toe in insulated Arctic suits.
Yes, we were very happy to be bundled up on that day. The Western Hudson Bay beluga population is estimated at 60,000 individuals, making it one of the largest populations of belugas in the world. In the Churchill River, belugas aggregate in the river and estuary the ice-free season from late June until early September, with peak numbers in mid-July to mid-August. Different age classes, adults, juveniles, and calves generally move in and out of the rivers with the tides, but can be observed in the river at any time.
The reason the belugas aggregate here is debated among scientists, but Andy Reed told us that since belugas need to molt their skin, this may be the reason for their migrations to the Hudson Bay. Unlike humans who continually shed our skin, belugas keep these layers during the cold winter months in the Arctic and travel south to shed in the summers. It's been proposed that whales in polar regions can divert blood flow away from their skin to preserve body heat, which stops the normal continuous shedding of skin. The Churchill River is much warmer than the winter range for belugas, and the rocky bottom of the river is the perfect place to rub against the coarse gravel to remove the layer of old yellowed skin.
Churchill really is the perfect getaway for the belugas, which explains why so many of them travel there each summer. During peak months, the area is so packed with whales, it's impossible not to see them, which also makes it a perfect place for beluga tourism. While there, we had a few chances to go out on the river and into the bay, where we saw hundreds of beluga whales that swam right up under our boat and followed behind in our wake. Andy Reed had to remind me several times not to squeal with excitement, which was surprisingly hard, as these brilliant creatures approached our boat, making bubbles and turning upside down to, quote, see better or echolocate at our boat and understand their surroundings. Belugas are called the canaries of the sea because of their complex patterns of communication, which researchers have yet to decipher.
Since their main form of communication is through sound, marine mammals, and particularly odontocetes, or toothed whales, dolphins, and porpoises, are very susceptible to marine noise and exposure. Belugas have the potential to be even more impacted by sound in the ocean than other species because of adaptations, notably the melon, or the large fatty head of the beluga that allows them to have this highly developed auditory communication. The melon is the rounded structure on the top of the beluga's head, composed of lipids that individuals can manipulate into different shapes when producing sounds. Like in Finding Dory, when the beluga Bailey uses her melon to focus and project echolocation signals through the water.
This upcoming sound is the sound of a cargo ship moving at 20 knots, courtesy of Thomas R. Kitekeffer.
Vessel traffic affects marine mammals in a variety of ways, such as behavioral disturbance, acoustic masking, chemical contamination, and increased vessel strikes. The impact of vessel noise and its impact on cetaceans is a major research component in Doug Novacek's lab within the Duke University Marine Lab. Recent research within Churchill on the belugas has found that their highly attuned hearing abilities can be impacted by vessel noise almost 80 kilometers or around 50 miles away, which would be about the length of 20 laps around the Indy 500. When belugas are exposed to vessel noise, even at these high distances, researchers have found increased swimming rate. Additionally, when vessels are within 5 kilometers of the acoustic recorder, the normally chatty belugas reduce their vocalization significantly. This articulates the concept of acoustic masking, which I like to think of as trying to speak over a bustling room full of chatter. This would be really hard to speak over or to ignore while trying to do work. And for belugas and other cetaceans, the ambient noise from vessels means that they might just stop vocalizing for their inability to be heard above the rest of the noise. It could also mean that they could become harder to spot for ecotourism operators, since studies in other locations have observed belugas may change their behavior in response to boat traffic, diving or swimming away from the source of the sound.
We interviewed Wally Dotrich,
and here's what he had to say about his relationship with the beluga whale and how vessel traffic might impact this relationship.
In my world, I look at our belugas as our business partners because we provide some sense of protection for them. And in response, we get a close, intimate relationship with the belugas in that they are very friendly and our clients enjoy it.
Moreover, sound travels much faster through water than through the air, so any changes in the overall soundscape are much more prominent underwater than we may perceive above the water. As sea ice recedes due to climate change, we're already seeing an increase in the number of vessels that are traveling in and around the Hudson Bay and other northern passageways. This increase in vessel traffic can significantly change the soundscape and may have serious impacts on the belugas that call Churchill their summer home.
Churchill may be especially impacted by increasing vessel traffic due to its history as a port town. For centuries, the port of Churchill has been a very important trade location. From the site of the Hudson Bay Company fur trading post to an international commercial port to a distributor of supplies to communities further north in Canada. Earlier this year, Churchill saw its first cruise ship that docked at the port in over a decade. For Churchill, this increase in boat traffic is not only a potential negative impact to the belugas, but also for tourism operators who rely on them as part of their livelihood.
Churchill represents an excellent opportunity for last chance tourism, which gives visitors the opportunity to view endangered locations and species before they disappear. Churchill is situated in the perfect location for ecotourism, as the town is directly in the path of polar bear migration and, of course, beluga migration. There are also excellent opportunities for bird watching and viewing the aurora borealis. The town is close to the Churchill Wildlife Management Area and Wapusk National Park, and also boasts historical sites, including the Fort Prince of Wales National Historical Site, a remnant of the Hudson Bay Company. While in Churchill, we had the opportunity to see the Big Three, belugas, polar bears, and the Northern Lights, and more. We got to see polar bears in the wildlife management area, boat trips to see belugas, and hikes to see birds, shipwrecks, abandoned rocket ranges, and the incredible triple junction biome of the boreal forest, the tundra, and the Hudson Bay. While there, we stayed at the Churchill Northern Studies Center, a nonprofit focusing on research and experiential education, where the Aurora Dome and back deck offered the perfect spot for gazing at the Northern Lights.
While aboard Lazy Bear Lodge's large tourism vessel, we saw so many belugas in the water surrounding us that the whales looked like white caps at the tops of the waves. The water was so clear in some sections that we were able to see the eyes of mothers and calves as they gracefully dip below the surface. We had a lot of fantastic photos of the belugas thanks to their highly social and inquisitive nature, but also past marine mammal identification that Greg and Anna had. Dr. Dave Johnson is also interested in starting a collaboration with Wally Dutrick, the owner and founder of Lazy Bear Lodge. Wally originally was a local polar bear tour guide and motivated by the devastating loss from wildfires as a result of climate change to create an eco-friendly lodge that would reflect the history and beauty of its surrounding.
Now here's more from Wally on his upbringing and his connection to Churchill.
We basically live and work in Churchill and have spent all my adult years and a good portion of my teen years in Churchill. So I'm always looking at to try and understand the Northern Studies Center. If I'm correct, they use cliche on the side of their building, to know and understand. Think of understand. You know, you can look at a beluga whale and you can say, oh, that's cute, it's got a permanent smile, smooth skin, obviously eats fish, but do you understand how that animal lives? Just like me trying to understand where my clients come from, how they live, what the height of building they work in, where do they get their food? Interesting things about any ecosystem. Some ecosystems are downtown New York. So when you do things like recycling and when you do things like reusing, repurposing, living within a budget and such, you try to understand things in a deeper way.
Would you describe yourself as an environmentalist, and why or why not?
If you know my history, I'm a very conservative person, meaning that I'm very old school in so many ways. I believe highly, very much so, in personal responsibility.
Yeah, so I guess I'm interested in this idea of what's the role of conservatives in conservation or in environmental protection.
Key word that a lot of people throw around, and it is a key word, and it is of utter importance, is sustainability. We built our lodge on fire-killed trees. We used a resource that otherwise would probably just be lying in the bush right now, ceiling boards that you see in the lodge, especially in the lobby in the cafe, was recycled from there. The logs, as well as a lot of recycled wood, like the floor of the lodge, came from the original Canadian National Railway warehouse. It's natural for a business person to want sustainability because that's part of our bottom line. It's not normal for a business to waste, because waste is throwing away profit, and profit is conserving. We do have a lobbying organization called the Churchill Beluga Whale Tour Operator Association. You can see our website on behalf of our industry, but obviously the whales and the bears, like the federal government wants to create a marine park in our area, and I'm all for that. I'm okay with that. But I'm just hoping that they don't put onerous regulations and permitting process in place. I'm one of two founding members of the Auxiliary Coast Guard in Churchill. All our boats are certified with them. And then Sea North Tours, they also do working with the Inuit guys up north so that we have a respectful dialogue and a relationship with them so that the belugas basically in the Seal River and south of the Seal River are unharmed and unthreatened. Still have to respect indigenous use of belugas because sustainability means that I got to keep those smiling belugas coming back. They have to be healthy and they have to be fit so that we can continue having that commodious relationship with them.
Dave hopes this partnership will be mutually beneficial as future Master of Environmental Management students can travel to Churchill, understand the unique social fabric of the town, and then co-create plans for enhancing sustainability practices that would generate greater revenue, but also, more importantly, work towards a larger goal of reducing carbon emissions to help our beluga whales.
What I envision right from the start when I spoke with David is the type of research that they can provide would be useful for both our federal and our provincial or state level governments. They're always interested in getting accurate numbers, to see where the populations are at. And there's quite a dichotomy between different groups as opposed to where the polar bear population is, for instance. With Duke on board, especially with the drone technology that you guys have, we are hoping in the future that once you're established in our area, that perhaps we can fly different zones along the Hudson Bay coastline. Doing is you're giving a snapshot of the bear population that would otherwise probably cost us at least hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars to create that census. And I'm not putting an obligation on Duke, but we could almost do it on a yearly basis.
During our time at Churchill, we visited the Itsanitook Museum, which is free to the public. The Itsanitook Museum was originally created in 1944 by Catholic missionaries that had acquired hundreds of Inuit carvings and artifacts dating from the pre-Dorset, which is about 1700 BCE, through the Dorset, Thule, and modern Inuit times. Dorset refers to members of the Arctic small tool tradition, who were the first inhabitants of the Churchill area, living largely a nomadic lifestyle following caribou for hunting. As an Irish-American raised Catholic, I believe that it's imperative that I recognize my positionality in the grander context of the history of settler colonialism, but also in the particular connection that I have to this changing landscape of Churchill and the wrongful subjugation, relocation, and erasure of Indigenous peoples. The Indigenous peoples of Churchill are the Thule people, the ancestors of the present-day Inuit who arrived around the year 1000 BCE, and the Chipewyan and Cree people. Churchill is on Treaty 5 territory, which was signed in 1875 between Queen Victoria Britain, who at that time ruled Ireland and my ancestors, and the governor of Manitoba, and by the many different Indigenous and First Nation and Métis groups in Manitoba, in exchange for access of an area of approximately 100,000 square miles, the Indigenous signatories of Treaty 5 were supposed to receive 160 acres per family of five, annuities of $5 per year, clothing and medals, and articles for agricultural cultivation, education, and the right to hunt, fish, and trap.
During our visit to the Atsanitak Museum, we spoke with Lorraine Branson, the current curator who's worked at the museum since 1973. It was a fun moment because we'd been exploring the museum and checking out the gift shop when Anna decided to ask the woman at the cash register for advice choosing a book about Churchill. Turns out one of the books Anna had picked was written by Lorraine, who was the woman behind the register. Lorraine wears many hats at the museum, from curator to cashier to author. This goes to show just how small the town really is, with a summer population of only around 900 residents. What's even more impressive is that a town with less than 1,000 residents draws thousands of tourists from across the globe every year. The Atsanitak Museum is just one of the many places tourists might visit when they come to Churchill, but the entire tourism industry and economy of Churchill stands to be dramatically changed in the coming decades as climate change alters the nature and wildlife of the area.
So thinking about our trip to Churchill and the rise of last chance ecotourism in the region, why do you think that belugas are sentinels of climate change in the Arctic, and what can they tell us about our culture and identity as human beings?
Belugas make such great sentinels for climate change because they're so well known and well loved by people across the globe. One of my first introductions to the marine environment that made me interested in pursuing this type of career was with belugas. When I was a kid in South Carolina, my family loved to visit the Georgia Aquarium, which has beluga whales, and they were one of my favorite animals to see. I remember one time I was there with my grandpa, who's this bald white guy. He was wearing a white t-shirt, and I looked at him and I looked at the belugas and thought, wow, my grandpa's a beluga. And of course he isn't, but this just goes to show the important connections that people form with these incredible species. Belugas are so important for tourism, for subsistence, for research, even for the existence value of them just existing. And so belugas make great sentinels because we care about what happens to them. And if we care about what happens to these belugas, then we'll care about the effects of climate change in the Arctic and on other species.
I believe that climate change is the biggest challenge for our generation, as it will exacerbate existing social inequities and threaten the existence of many species, but is a problem where the future is not truly set in stone yet. The difference between a world that is 2 degrees warmer and a world that is 3 degrees warmer is exponentially different, as the global change in atmospheric patterns and weather will not be felt equally across the globe. The Arctic is of special concern as it has been experiencing warming ocean temperatures at unprecedented rates, causing extreme changes to seasonal ice coverage and thickness. Unpredictable ice patterns affect the ability of belugas to migrate and forage normally. In this way, belugas can truly act as canaries in the coal mine and also act as a unifying motivator to fight climate change. I want to live in a world where I get to read the Baby Beluga book to my children, just as my parents did to me, and know that there are still many healthy populations of these social lovable creatures. We are going to take a page out of the How to Save a Planet podcast playbook and provide some calls to action that we are also going to include in the show notes. If you want to learn more about belugas in Churchill and the ongoing conservation effort, check out the Churchill Beluga Whale Tour Operator Association, the Center for Northern Studies, the Sea North Tours, and Oceans North. Climate change is complex and sometimes can feel very overwhelming, but you are not alone. There are many ways to connect with others over climate anxiety. The Climate Cafe is a community-led, informal space where everyone is welcome to join the conversation and participate in climate action. Also, the Good Grief Network and the Climate Awakening also host virtual ways for you to connect. Trying to figure out what you can do to address climate change, making your own climate Venn diagram might help to discover what your strengths are and they can fit into averting a climate catastrophe. If you need inspiration, check out the climatevenndiagram.info for simple instructions, a template, and examples of how climate action Venn diagrams that others have made. If you want to learn more about ecotourism and ensure that your next trip is socially and environmentally responsible, check out some tips at Vox for sustainable travel.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. This podcast was written and produced by Aileen Lavelle and Sarah Norton, with support from the Seize the Day team. Our theme song was written and recorded by Joe Morton. Our artwork is by Stephanie Hillsgrove. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter or Instagram at Seize the Day Pod and leave us a rating wherever you listen to podcasts.